Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, with us in the studio right now, this is a great treat.
It is.
We have a human who is perhaps the funniest person in Hollywood you've never heard. You don't know her name.
And yet she's behind the voices of everyone we do know their names of, from politicians to late night talk show hosts to famous actors and actresses.
To Marge and Homer Simpson.
There you go.
As it turns out, Nell Scovell is a writer in Hollywood. She's got written a tell-all memoir, and it's a tell-all all about herself.
Super funny.
Well, which makes it a Nell-all.
I see what you did there.
See?
I like that. Get used to the rim shot. You're going to get a lot of them today. Just the funny parts.
It gets better.
Is what... Well, let's hope. Just the funny parts is the name of the book, and it's great. There's so many great things in here, including but not limited to the you wrote jokes for the president, for President Obama, right?
For the White House Correspondents' Dinner,
right?
Wow.
And it was so much fun because his delivery was so good. And in fact, I quote in the book Albert Brooks saying that Obama's delivery is like Johnny Carson's.
Oh, wow.
What? Yeah. That's big.
It is.
That doesn't get any bigger.
Did you take that into consideration when you were writing him? Because politicians might not be as good at delivery. I mean, did you think about that at the time?
I saw President Obama as the world's greatest sitcom character because he's the leader of the free world, but he lives with his mother-in-law.
Right.
That's right.
So I actually once wrote a joke. I don't think he used it where he talked about how my approval rating is quite low. But given that I live with my mother-in-law, I'm surprised I have any at all.
That's a great place for him to go that I never really saw him going.
That is an excellent point, actually.
I love that.
Now, actually, here's it. You have the jokes that were not used by the president. Now, how does that work? When you submit them to the president, mm-hmm. It's like anything that you're writing for. There's some of the stuff's going to get redlined, right? And did you ever have to go in and try to repitch a joke? No, you really want, this one's going to kill.
Well, I would pitch them to Jon Favreau, who was his head speechwriter.
Not the Jon Favreau from movies and television, by the way,
no.
That people think about.
Separate guy.
Right, separate guy.
And
important to note.
There was one joke I wrote about Matt Damon where I used something that Matt Damon had said where he had criticized the president saying that he was disappointed with his performance. So I sent in a joke that was President Obama saying, you know, I love Matt Damon and, you know, I was sad that he said he was disappointed with my performance, but I just saw the Adjustment Bureau, so right back at you, Matt.
Yes.
So I write this joke, and it's in the script, and that morning, the morning of the show, Favreau emails me and says that the president isn't sure he's going to do that joke. He thinks it's too mean. So I wrote back, I've seen the Adjustment Bureau, and truth is a defense.
Did he go with it?
He did, and I remember watching and heard him say, I love Matt Damon, and I just screamed because I realized he was doing it.
Oh, that's so cool.
I do like this particular... Now, they axed this joke, although I think it would have... Now, in hindsight, they might have wanted to have used it. If Trump wins, he gets the nuclear code. I'll give him a hint. It's the same number as on my Kenyan birth certificate.
Oh.
I laughed at my own joke.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that a dream for a comedy writer to write for the president of the White House? You have this illustrious resume, having worked for just about everyone in Hollywood and certainly the top comedic talents, but even, you know, like I say, sitcoms and beyond. But then this gig must be so different, I would think, in terms of getting asked.
Yeah, it's up there with Kermit the Frog. No, I'm actually
did
from
that too.
Newton, which is... Massachusetts, which is maybe the most liberal city in the most liberal state. So writing for that president meant a lot.
Oh, cool.
So let's talk about some of the other work here, too. Oh, well, first of all, before we do anything, let me just get the plug in here.
Oh, yes.
I'm always fearful that when the guest leaves the studio, they'll say, you forgot the plug, and then they'll kick me somewhere. So let me get this right. Tonight, you're one of the writers of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, right?
The creator.
And the it's from your mind.
Showrunner. Well, it was based on an Archie comic book, but TV show, the ABC TV show came from my mind.
The Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and tonight they're showing, there's a screening of this at Logan Theater, 2646 North of Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, 7 o'clock. And you're going to be speaking, right? During, before,
right.
It's before, during, or after. You can screen talk your own show?
Oh, do it like MST3K style?
yeah.
No, it's a really fun episode. Chris Elliott is the guest star, if you remember him from the Letterman show. And he's hilarious. And Caroline Ray is so funny in this episode.
Excellent. And so that's for tonight, if you want to do that. And then tomorrow night, now, I don't know if there's tickets even available left for this, but Nell Scovell in conversation with Melody Hobson.
Oh.
Melody Hobson.
Chicago's own.
Right.
Wow. That's fabulous.
Yes. And you sneak her the business card and go, hey, if George is working on
it. Yeah, you know, George Lucas, you know, he's got a project.
It wouldn't kill you just to just remember me for the upcoming project.
But she's a dynamo in her own right.
She is, but I wrote a lot of this book up at Skywalker Ranch.
You did?
Yeah, I did. Oh. They let me slip up there. It was wonderful.
No, the things you've done.
Why not?
But the book, and I read it over vacation. I thought, wow, this is a great book, probably a must read for any young woman who wants to go to Hollywood, I would think. Because you're in some ways a trailblazer. You're the only woman in the room for Letterman, for
The Simpsons.
And so many
Monk.
Other experiences. Yeah. It just felt like, okay, did you ever wonder how you got there? And then dealing with that, it just... Kind of easy.
I started off as a sports writer, and maybe I shouldn't say this in Chicago, but I wrote for the Boston Globe, and I grew up loving the Red Sox and the Celtics and the Bruins. So I felt very comfortable in those rooms, and I was what they called a good culture fit. You know, I also love science fiction. I love Monty Python, and I never thought those things were guy things. They were things I loved. They were Nell things.
So it wasn't like a boy humor thing, and that's but I mean, humor kind of, this kind of writing, especially The Simpsons, you know, to my eye and ear, is the greatest sitcom in the history of the medium. Right? It's just, it's
right.
It's the most enduring for sure. It is also, it has to be relevant. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how relevant and sometimes prescient. It is, right? I mean, it predicted 17 years ago that Donald Trump would become president of the United States.
So, and it was so funny back then.
So it does kind of have that. It does kind of have that moment. But it is. But you know, in order to be able to do that, that to me seems like late night television because it's so, you know, in the moment,
topical,
and has to be on the muscle. Is that the most stressful environment to be in?
Well, that show. Was the funniest writer's room I've been in. And I could have written three scripts from our time in the room. So I wrote the episode where Homer eats blowfish and thinks he's going
Fugu,
to
right?
die.
Right.
I remember that.
Poison fish, tasty fish. So, you know, the other line I love where Homer goes to see the doctor and the doctor comes out and says, I'm sorry, you have 24 hours to live. And Homer says, 24 hours? And he says, well, 22. I'm sorry I kept you waiting so long.
That's awesome.
Did you, I'd love to get your take on this. Can we pull up the Ted Cruz line about The Simpsons from last week? Did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, I want to play this.
Ted Cruz supposedly a big Simpsons fan,
yeah.
Yet he made sort of an analogy to politics that no one really understood.
Right.
Maybe
so
you
like
do.
So as a writer, you know, at one time in your career, being a writer of The Simpsons, I would love to get your thought on whether or not this makes any sense to you, since you had to know about the character construction and, you know, who all the characters were. He seems to really understand the characters and seems to get it, but he equates it to what's happening in the modern moment here. When it's it's a little, I think it's disturbing. Probably Mrs. Cruz is also disturbed by it. Listen to this.
You know, I will say a lot of Democrats saying how happy they were not to be the party of Homer Simpson. I think Homer Simpson is an everyman. He works hard. He provides for his family. Sure, is he flawed? Is he imperfect? Of course. You look at Bart. You saw a lot of people on the left blasting Bart. All right, fine. So he's a teenage delinquent. He loves to be free. He doesn't want a whole bunch of sanctimonious Seymour Skinners running his life. I think that's a libertarian sentiment.
Who's going to break it to him that it's a cartoon family.
Right. And it's basically a social commentary about not being like those people. And to his point was that Lisa Simpson is the annoying Simpson.
Oh.
And that the other Simpsons are all the heroes, and like Lisa's always like, you know, telling them what to do, and who wants to be like Lisa Simpson? Well, Lisa Simpson's the only one who knows what's going on.
That's the whole
right?
point.
Right. Am I wrong about that? Did I miss that? I didn't miss that, right?
No, okay. Not at all. You know, I wrote on the second season when it was so fresh that I remember in my first meeting asking who Ned Flanders was. Because someone mentioned Ned Flanders, and I was like, the neighbor. And I was like, well, what's his character? And someone said, well, he's unfailingly nice to Homer, so Homer hates him. But that's the guy that Ted Cruz thinks is the hero.
Although Ned Flanders is now the new National Security Advisor.
Yeah.
If you actually look at it closely enough.
I like the mustache.
Yeah,
it's
you can see
nice.
That that's what's going to happen. It does. I do think that John Bolton looks Matt Groening drew him, right?
You know, he's kind of a cartoon character.
Like one of those kinds of characters. I don't know.
If you went to his house, they'd be pulling taffy.
Oh, God.
You're so brutally honest, though, in this, too, about what you faced. I mean, I think that's what's kind of cool. But you make it funny, so you want to read it. It's not, like, excruciating. And you just, I guess that's your life, right? You've made so many, you must make moments that are tough to deal with funny. Were you teased a lot as being, like, the only woman on the staff and things like that? Were you taking a lot of heat from the boys or... How did that feel?
Well, I tried to blend in. I kind of thought, well, if they don't notice I'm a woman, they'll let me stay. But where it would get weird is I worked on a show called Warehouse 13, which was on the Sci-Fi Channel. It's a terrific show. And I had written an episode where one of the agents was pregnant. And I gave her this heightened sense of smell, which is what happens to women sometimes in pregnancy. And I got notes on my outline, and one of the studio executives was like, is that a thing, that sense of smell?
Never heard of it.
And I was like, yes.
That's right, Harvey. It is a thing.
Yeah, really.
And I realized of seven people on this phone call, I was the only one who had ever been pregnant. So that's what you miss. I mean, I think women, the craft of writing isn't different whether you're male or female. But what is different is you bring these experiences into the room.
Your observations are different. And, you know, it's interesting because you would think, you know, being around comedians, comedy writers, people who are in, you know, their whole life is sort of steeped in irony and looking for irony and looking for things that don't quite fit and observations that nobody else has made before. It seems like everybody is like sort of suffering from the same malaise. So there's more identity in that than there is in your gender in some respects.
Well, I tell a story about the first sale I ever made was I wrote an episode for It's Gary Shandling Show. And I go to L.A. and I meet Gary Shandling, who has this new documentary on HBO, which is amazing. And he tells me, you write like a guy, which I think he meant
as a compliment,
as a total compliment. And I think he meant I wrote hard jokes. But I started thinking about it after and thinking, you know, so many of his jokes were about being insecure about his looks, about his relationships. And I thought, he wrote like a guy.
Girl.
Like a girl. He wrote like a girl.
You should have said that right back to him.
Yeah.
You, pal, write like a girl. All right.
One of us
This is a great book, and this is great for people who love the comedy or television, late night television, The Simpsons, Letterman, any of that. It's a look behind. And also, I know that obviously we're in this moment, too, where there's a reawakening. I'm completely woke, by the way, just in case you're wondering.
You're woke.
I'm totally woke about, you know, what's happening with the Me Too movement and all of that. And I know this isn't really necessarily about that, but it reads really well in the context of this right
of
now.
Of what we're going through, yes.
So
it's been going on a long time.
Turns out.
Right.
Yeah. It turns out.
It's like, I mean, Hollywood actually has a cutesy nickname, the casting couch, which does sound better than the sexual harassment sofa.
I just can't get over the word perched now that has been used by Stormy Daniels.
Don't bring it up.
Perched.
Please.
There was a picture that's floating around the internet today of him actually perching on a bed from like the 1970s.
Thanks to people
where he's like
on the
lying
show
across.
It.
He has my hair from like 1976. That's what worries me. All right. Nell Scovell is going to be tonight. By the way, if you want tickets to any of these events, ChicagoIdeas.com. That's the Ideas Week website. ChicagoIdeas.com. Nell tonight, screening of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And that's going to be at the Logan Theater at 2600 North Milwaukee Avenue.
And I'm going to give a pigtail, a prop from a Muppets episode I wrote to the person who asked the best question.
Wow.
Oh, no, see, that's a big deal right there. And then you sit down with Melody Hobson tomorrow night at Venue 610 South Michigan Avenue. I think that's sold out, but you can just go to Ideas, ChicagoIdeas.com. All the details are all there. Nell, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Good seeing you.
Here is Judy going to tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour.